By morning, things weren't any clearer in Conrad's mind, at least as far as his feelings for Pamela Tarleton were concerned. He had come to a decision about one matter, though.
You're coming with us.
I thought you were determined to send me back to Valverde, and from there, back east.
I would if there was a way to do it that wouldn't put you in danger. But we're too far away to send you back alone, and I can't turn back until we've rescued Maggie McTavish.
Taking me along is going to be dangerous, too, you know.
Of course it is. But at least this way I can keep an eye on you and try to see to it that you stay out of trouble.
Be still, my heart.
A short time later, everyone was ready to ride. They had an extra horse now, which would come in handy when they found Maggie and took her away from the men who'd kidnapped her. She wouldn't have to ride double with one of her rescuers, since Pamela's horse was no longer limping. Conrad knew the possibility still existed that Maggie was already dead. He wasn't going to give up hope, though, until he saw her body for himself. And that was an unusual situation for him these days, he realized. Clinging to even a shred of hope in times of trouble was something he hadn't done very often since Rebel died. The nine of them pushed on toward the Hatchet Mountains as the sun rose higher in the sky. The peaks were gray and purple in the distance where they thrust up from the scrub-covered plains. Conrad didn't know how rugged the mountains were since he had never been there before. He was willing to bet that they held plenty of hiding places. Places where Anthony Tarleton and his hired killers could lie in ambush and wait for him to follow them. If his theory was right, Conrad thought. The day quickly grew hotter as the sun climbed higher. He looked over at Pamela and saw the weariness and strain on her face. She had ridden for hours the day before as she followed them, and Conrad knew she was probably very sore and tired. Her jawline was firm and determined, though. She had never been a woman who gave up easily when she wanted something, he recalled.
Do you still have that gun you pointed at me yesterday?
Of course I do. I'm not giving it up, either.
I wouldn't think of asking you to. Can you handle a rifle? You have an extra Winchester now.
I've never fired a rifle, but how hard can it be? I know which end the bullet comes out of.
He didn't bother explaining that a Winchester was pretty heavy, especially for someone who wasn't accustomed to using one. With any luck, Pamela wouldn't ever find out, because she'd never need to use one of the weapons. They drew steadily closer to the mountains. The hatchets didn't rise gradually. They thrust up sharply from the flats, with only a few small foothills. Conrad kept his eye on them, hoping to see a flash of reflected sunlight off metal. Something to tell them that they were on the right trail, other than the tracks they'd been following for the past 2 days. The thought that they might be trailing somebody who had nothing to do with Maggie's kidnapping worried him. However, that was unlikely, especially if his theory about Anthony Tarleton was correct. But it couldn't be ruled out. Around mid-morning, Dave Whitfield looked over at Conrad.
You know, there's something starting to worry me. Once those fellows we're following get into the mountains, they'll be able to look back out here and see us on these flats.
That's true. But if we're right about them leaving such a clear trail on purpose, they'll expect to see someone following them.
You intend to ride right into whatever trap they're setting for us, don't you, Brown?
You know the better way to find out what they really want?
Whitfield inclined his head toward Pamela, who had fallen back a short distance.
You're gonna be mighty dangerous for your lady friend.
She chose to come after us, and she's not my lady friend.
Maybe not now. I ain't so sure what she's got in mind for the future, though.
It doesn't matter.
The hell it don't! Once a gal makes up her mind about something, there ain't a whole hell of a lot us men folk can do about it. I was married for nigh on to 25 years before my wife passed on, Lord rest her soul, and I learned that much.
A faint smile tugged at Conrad's mouth. He supposed that Whitfield had a point. He and Rebel had been married for only a few years, but already in that time Conrad had learned that he was wasting his time trying to change her mind about anything she considered important. Why, he remembered once when... He stopped short in his thoughts as he realized he was about to chuckle at the memory of something Rebel had done. It didn't matter what it was, or how amusing it had been at the time. She was gone, and he had no right to be thinking of her with anything except grief and utter devastation. The problem was, grief and utter devastation got mighty weary after a while. Surely it wouldn't hurt anything to remember some of the good times and smile a little at the memories. Before Conrad had a chance to ponder that, Jack Trace urged his horse alongside Whitfield's.
Smoke up yonder, boss.
Yeah, I see it.
So did Conrad. It was only a thin thread of bluish-gray rising into the sky from somewhere not far into the mountains. It came from a campfire, or possibly a chimney, Conrad thought. Chances were it also marked the destination of the men they'd been following.
If we keep going, we're likely to be riding right into their gun sights. You want to get killed over some squatter gal, Dave?
Damn it, I told Brown and I'd help him find the McTavish girl to prove I didn't have anything to do with what happened. We ain't found her yet, but if you want to turn around and go, Jack, I ain't gonna stop you. Same goes for the rest of the boys.
You're paying our wages. I reckon you're still calling the tune.
Damn right I am. Come on.
As the group rode on, Pamela rode up beside Conrad again.
Do you think they're setting a trap for us, Conrad?
It's likely. That's why you're not going with us.
What? Well, I've come this far. You can't mean to send me back now.
No, that's not practical, or I would. But as soon as we get to the mountains, we're going to find a safe place for you to stay while the rest of us check out that smoke.
You're going to leave me by myself?
You have your pistol, and we'll leave you that rifle and plenty of supplies. If anything happens and we don't come back, you'll be able to reach Val Verde in a couple of days. Just take note of where the sun comes up and ride toward it. Once you hit the railroad, you can follow it straight to the settlement.
By myself?
You'll be fine.
If you say so.
The mountains took on a greenish tinge due to the scrub pines and clumps of hardy grass on the slopes. The hatchets were low enough so that none of the peaks were above the tree line. They weren't the same sort of craggy gray mountains that were found farther north in the Rockies. They still had a bleak look about them, however, despite the vegetation. They might have almost been mountains on the moon, Conrad mused. He felt that far from everything he had ever known. They reached the mountains in the early afternoon. The smoke was still visible, rising from a point above them. Conrad spotted a cluster of pines at the base of a hill and pointed them out.
There might be a spring over there. We can water the horses and leave Miss Tarleton there if there is.
Sound like a good idea. Let's check it out.
What they found was a little oasis in the middle of this dry, rugged landscape. A spring bubbled out of some rocks, forming a pool about 10 feet across. Several pines ringed it, and the grass was thicker and greener on its banks than anywhere Conrad had seen since leaving Val Verde. Everyone had dismounted to water their horses.
This will be a good place for you.
I don't suppose it would do any good to say I'd rather go with you.
Not a bit. You've got food, water, and shelter here. If none of us have come back to get you by morning, you head for Val Verde. You hear me?
I'm going to have to spend the night here by myself?
Possibly. I don't know yet, because I don't know what we'll find further up the mountain.
All right. I know you're just doing what you think is best, Conrad. I hope you're right.
So do I.
I reckon we might as well mount up and get up on the mountain, find out what's waiting for us.
Trouble! That's what's waiting for us.
More than likely.
Whitfield grabbed the saddle horn, put his foot in the stirrup, and swung up. The rest of the men followed suit. Whitfield gestured toward the smoke.
This is your party, Browning. Why don't you and McTavish lead the way?
Conrad knew what the rancher meant. If there was an ambush waiting up there, Whitfield intended for him and James to take the first bullets. He was willing to run that risk. He glanced back at Pamela, who stood beside the pool looking forlorn, then heeled his horse into motion. James was right behind him. A couple of narrow valleys twisted through the hills at the base of the mountains, rising steadily at the same time. The riders followed them and came out on one of the lower shoulders of the tallest mountain in the small chain.
That's Big Hatchet Mountain.
Whitfield nodded toward the peak.
I hunted bighorn sheep up on it once. That was more than 10 years ago. The Apaches did some hunting on that trip, too. I damn near lost my hair. I, for one, ain't sorry to see them red savages get put on reservation.
That's because you weren't forced off your land like they were.
Their land? You're saying this was their land? Only because they stole it from some other bunch of old red savages who live here before them. And that bunch stole it from whoever had it before them. I reckon you gotta go all the way back to the Garden of Eden to find some land that wasn't stole from somebody else at one time or another.
What Whitfield said made sense, Conrad supposed. He didn't really care at the moment, though. His only concern was locating Margaret McTavish and finding out if he was right about the identities of the men who had taken her from her home. They came within a few hundred yards of the place where the smoke appeared to originate, and they stopped.
We'll dismount and go ahead on foot from here.
Whitfield and his men complied. A ridge jutted up ahead of them, and as they came closer, it was obvious that the smoke came from the other side of it. Conrad motioned for the other men to stop.
The rest of you stay here. James and I will go up to the top of the ridge and take a look.
Oh, hell with that. I'm coming with you.
So am I.
Conrad thought about arguing with him, then decided that it wasn't worth the trouble. Both Whitfield and Trace had much more experience on the frontier than he did. They wouldn't give away their presence. Anyway, if he was right, the kidnappers were already waiting for them. The other four men stayed where they were and held the horses, while Conrad, James, Whitfield, and Trace approached the crest of the ridge on foot, as quietly as possible. A few stunted bushes grew on top of the ridge. The men used them for cover as they took off their hats and edged up far enough to peer over the crest. They looked down the far side of the slope for a long moment.
Well, what do you know about that?
The brushy ridge dropped steeply into a circular depression about 500 yards across. The ground at the bottom of it was fairly flat and grassy. Stands of stubby pines grew here and there, and other areas were choked by briars, cactus, and scrubby mesquite trees. It wasn't a very pretty place, but at one time somebody had thought it would make a decent place to live. A large log cabin that looked at least 20 years old sat in a clearing in the pines. The smoke Conrad and the other men had been following rose from a stone chimney at one end of the structure. A pole corral with a number of horses in it lay behind the cabin. Conrad didn't see anyone moving around.
They've got her in there, the bastards. I know it.
More than likely you're right, boy. I don't see a good way of getting in there. I reckon we could lay siege to the place, but who knows how long it'd take to get them out that way.
Too long. If they have Maggie, they could threaten to kill her if we didn't let them go. It looks to me like a man could get pretty close to the cabin and still stay in the trees. If he could work his way around the cabin, then climb on the roof and throw a blanket over the chimney.
Smoke him out, eh? That might work. The fellow who tried it would be running a mighty big risk of being shot before he ever got there, though.
I'll do it.
That will be my job, and we'll wait until dusk. That way it'll be harder for their guards to see.
Dusk is hours away. We don't know what's going on in there. They could be doing anything to Maggie.
Don't worry about that, McTavish. Anything they were gonna do to your sister, they've already done. Probably more than once.
Damn it, Jack, there ain't no call to talk like that.
Just tell them the truth.
Let it go, James. I know that's easier said than done.
Damn right it is. What if that was your sister in there, Brownie?
Look, I know how you feel. It'll still be better to wait until the light starts to go.
Yeah, you're right. Why don't we leave a man here to keep an eye on the cabin and the rest of us can go back where we left the others?
That seemed like a reasonable suggestion to Conrad, as long as it wasn't James McTavish they left behind. He didn't trust the young man not to do something foolish. Trace suddenly stepped forward.
I'll stay, boss.
All right. You let us know if anything changes down there.
I will.
Conrad felt worry stir uneasily inside him. He didn't trust Trace, but as far as he could see, the gunman had no reason to betray them now. He moved back down the ridge with Whitfield and James. Two things filled his mind: concern for Maggie McTavish and the knowledge that he might soon be face to face with the man truly responsible for Rebel's death. When they rejoined the other men, Whitfield explained the situation to them. They nodded, taking the news expressionlessly. They were professional fighting men, so the prospect of one more battle didn't faze any of them. They didn't have any emotional ties to Maggie. This was just another job to them. Conrad and Whitfield hunkered on their heels to work out the rest of the plan. Everyone except Conrad would take up positions on top of the ridge so that they'd have good shots at the cabin in the depression.
Chances are, when the smoke forces them out, one of the men will have Maggie and will try to use her as a hostage. Since I'll be the closest, I'll take him. I'll jump in from the top of the cabin and get her away from him. As soon as I've done that, you open up on the rest of them.
Gun them down just like that?
They tried to kill Hamish McTavish. They may have succeeded for all we know. And they kidnapped an innocent young woman. I'd say they deserve whatever happens to them.
Don't reckon I can argue with that. One thing worries me, though. We figured they planned on bushwhacking us. How come they didn't? How come they're just sitting down there like they're waiting for us to come calling?
I don't know. Maybe we'll find out once we've taken the girl away from them.
If she's down there.
She's there. Where else can she be?
Where else indeed? Conrad knew from experience how difficult waiting could be. That afternoon was a good example. It seemed to drag by as they waited for the sun to dip below Big Hatchet Mountain. Conrad went up the ridge a couple of times to check with Trace and see if there'd been any activity around the cabin. Each time, the gunman shook his head.
Nobody's as much as even poked a head out. Are you sure they're down there, Browning?
They have to be. Their horses are there.
I reckon.
Late in the afternoon, James McTavish approached Whitfield.
You gotta give me my gun back now. You can't expect me not to help rescue my own sister.
You're convinced that I didn't have anything to do with her being carried off?
Yeah. I don't think even you would have gone to this much trouble to fool me.
Damn right I wouldn't. I got better things to do, like keeping my beef from being wide-looped by a bunch of no-good squatters.
Haven't you figured out by now that we're not rustlers?
Then what happened to that stock of mine that's disappeared?
Any number of things could have happened. Mexican bandits could have come across the border and stolen them, like I told you before. Or maybe you've got some men on your payroll who are working more for themselves than they are for you.
That's a mighty sorry accusation to be making, considering that you're going to be fighting side by side with those boys before too much longer.
One thing doesn't rule out the other.
No, I reckon not. Suppose it ain't impossible.
But it doesn't have anything to do with the job that's facing us now. When we get back to Valverde, you really ought to sit down with Hamish McTavish and hash out the problems the two of you have with each other. You'd be better off in the long run if you were friends rather than enemies.
How would you know? You don't strike me as a man who has many friends, mister.
That was true, Conrad thought. Philip Bearpaw might qualify, but there was no telling when or even if he would ever see the Paiute Indian again. He and Frank Morgan were friends now, over and above the blood tie between them. But Frank was a man who went his own way. Conrad had inherited that same trait. Even in his younger days, he'd never opened up and let anyone get that close to him. He had always been something of a loner, until he met Rebel. Things had changed then, and with her death, they had changed again. He might spend time with families like the McTavishes, might ride for a while with men such as Devil Dave Whitfield, but in the end, if he lived, he would move on by himself. That was the way he wanted it, a solitary man, a loner, now and forever. The sun finally made its long, slow way down the western sky and slid behind the mountains. As shadows gathered, the men started toward the top of the ridge, taking their horses along with them this time. When they left, they might have trouble on their back trail, so there wouldn't be any time to waste. James had his long-barreled Remington revolver back, along with his Winchester. Although an air of tension still existed between him and Whitfield, Conrad believed that the two of them had called a truce. He hoped it would last once they got back to Valverde, assuming, of course, that they made it back to the settlement safely. He stole ahead of the others, since he'd have to get in position first. He had a rolled-up blanket tucked under his left arm. When he got on top of the cabin, he would use it to block the chimney and cause the smoke to back up into the structure. Conrad started approaching the spot where they had left Trace earlier in the afternoon.
Trace?
Trace didn't respond.
Trace?
Still nothing. Conrad tensed with alarm for a second, then drew his gun and went on to the top of the ridge. Trace was nowhere in sight. Conrad bit back a curse. He had no idea where Trace could have gone. There hadn't been any shots, so it was unlikely that the kidnappers had stumbled on him. Of course, it's possible they might have taken him prisoner without having to resort to gunplay, Conrad supposed. Regardless of what had happened, he didn't have time to search for Trace right then. He had to get down there and put the plan he'd worked out with Whitfield into action. Carrying the blanket, he slipped over the crest and started down the slope, half crawling and half sliding. He used the brush for cover. If anyone was watching from inside the cabin, they might be able to catch a glimpse of him, but in the fading light, a watcher might not be able to distinguish him from an animal. When he reached the bottom of the ridge, he stayed in the brush and began working his way around the circular depression. He wondered if anyone was even in there. Smoke had been rising from the chimney all day, so someone had to be inside feeding the fire. When he was behind the cabin, he crawled out of the brush, came up in a crouch, and darted behind the nearest tree. Moving from tree to tree, he approached the building. The shadows were thicker since the sun was setting. Conrad paused behind a tree about 5 feet from the rear wall of the cabin. One of its branches stuck out far enough that he could climb onto it and drop down onto the roof. As a boy, he had never been one for climbing trees. One just didn't do such things in Boston. But he thought that he could manage. Climbing the tree proved to be harder than he'd expected, but he managed to reach the limb he wanted. Carefully, with his legs wrapped around the branch, he pulled himself along it until he could slide off. When he hung by his hands, his boots touched the rough wooden shingles on the roof. He let go. It seemed likely to him that whoever was inside didn't even know he was up there. The plan was working perfectly so far. As quietly as possible, he moved over to the chimney and draped the blanket over the flue. He held it in place and waited to see what would happen. He didn't have to wait very long. From the sound of the coughing, it was only one man. That didn't make any sense. There were a dozen horses in the corral, and Margaret McTavish should have been inside the cabin, too. Conrad suddenly had a bad feeling. The cabin door slammed open, and one man stumbled out, holding a bandana over his mouth and nose. He pulled his gun from its holster and aimed at the sky. That had to be a signal, but a signal for what? Guns began to roar up on the ridge. Those shots weren't being directed at the cabin. They probably weren't even being fired by James McTavish, Dave Whitfield, and Whitfield's men. The ambush they'd been waiting for was finally there. He palmed out his Colt, thinking that the man who had just given the signal would be turning the gun toward him next. Instead, the man just dashed into the trees. The move took Conrad so much by surprise that he didn't fire a shot. Whatever happened next, Conrad didn't want to be stuck up there on the roof. He would be a sitting duck if anyone decided to line their sights on him. He holstered his gun, then hurried to the rear of the cabin. He sat down, slid off the edge, hung by his hands for a second, and then dropped the rest of the way to the ground. The gunfire was still going on atop the ridge, but the shots seemed to be dying away. That couldn't be good, Conrad thought. He drew his Colt again and hurried into the trees. Maybe he could circle around and get back up there to see what was going on without the bushwhackers spotting him. Making his way up the slope wasn't easy. He had climbed only a few yards when the shooting stopped, leaving an eerie silence hanging over the depression along with the thickening shadows of approaching night.
Browning! Browning! You hear me, you son of a bitch?
Trace had somehow double-crossed them after all. Conrad had been right not to trust him, but that knowledge came a little bit late, he thought bitterly.
I know you're down here somewhere. Come on out in the open, in front of the cabin. You got my word that you won't be hurt if you do.
Conrad wondered why Trace thought such a promise would mean anything to him. He stayed where he was in the brush and didn't move. His brain worked furiously, trying to figure out some way he could get back to his horse and return to the spot where they'd left Pamela before any of the others could get to her. It was probably too late for James McTavish and Whitfield. Chances were they'd been killed in the ambush. That thought put a bitter, sour taste in Conrad's mouth.
I know you hear me, Browning, but just in case you ain't paying attention...
Conrad wasn't sure if the voice belonged to Pamela or to Maggie McTavish.
Oh, Conrad! Oh, God, help me! Conrad! You have to do what they say!
The world spun crazily around Conrad. Again. Again. The word beat like a madman's drum in his head. He didn't love Pamela anymore, but he did care about her, and she was in deadly danger because of him. Sure, it had been her own choice to follow him, but if she hadn't known him in the first place, she never would have experienced so much tragedy in her life, never would have found her life threatened that way. The same was true of Maggie McTavish. Was this his fate, to bring death and suffering to every young woman who crossed his path?
In front of the cabin, Browning! Now!
All right, just hold on.
A fusillade of shots didn't greet his response, so he figured that maybe they didn't plan to kill him out of hand. Anthony Tarleton had more in mind than simply killing him. That lunatic would want to torture him some more first. Conrad moved through the brush and broke out into the open. He walked toward the cabin. The sky above Big Hatchet Mountain still held a faint rosy hue, the last afterglow of the vanished sun. But most of the light was gone. Conrad saw two burning brands flare into life. The men who came down from the ridge needed torches to light their way. He stood in front of the cabin, his arms at his sides, the Colt still gripped in his right hand, and watched as the torchbearers descended the slope. When the two men reached the bottom, they separated so that the rest of the group could move between them and walk toward the cabin. Conrad saw Jack Trace and another man leading the way. He recognized the second man from Pamela's description. He was looking at Anthony Tarleton, the man responsible for Rebel's death and for all the other deaths that had followed in the past few months. Tarleton was a big man, as Pamela had said, and he wore a smug smile on his broad, florid face. He carried a rifle and wore the sort of clothes a rich man might wear on a hunting trip. Conrad could see between Trace and Tarleton and was startled to spot Dave Whitfield and James McTavish. He had figured that both men were dead. Whitfield clutched a bloody left arm, but seemed to be all right otherwise. James didn't appear to have any fresh wounds at all. He had his arm around a red-headed young woman who huddled against him as they made their way along slowly. Maggie, Conrad thought as he recognized her, and relief went through him. They were still in a very dangerous spot, but he was glad to see that Maggie was alive and apparently unharmed. Several men he hadn't seen before followed the prisoners with drawn guns. Covered and outnumbered as they were, Whitfield and James couldn't do anything except cooperate. Judging by the amount of shooting that had gone on a few minutes earlier, Conrad had a strong hunch that the rest of Whitfield's men were dead. But for some reason, Tarleton had spared the rancher and the young brother and sister. That left only one person unaccounted for. Conrad's eyes searched desperately for her. He knew she was alive because he had heard her cry to him moments earlier. The garish, flickering light from the torches washed over the area in front of the cabin as the group came to a stop. Anthony Tarleton looked at Conrad.
Conrad Browning, I've wanted to meet you for a long time, boy.
No longer than I've wanted to meet you.
Conrad fought down the impulse to jerk his gun up and put a bullet between Tarleton's eyes. He knew he was fast enough to do it before any of the others could stop him, even Jack Trace. At least he could die knowing that he had sent Rebel's murderer to hell. But that would leave Pamela at the mercy of Trace and the other killers, and he couldn't do that.
Where is she? Where's Pamela?
My dear niece? Come here, Pamela. Browning wants to see you for himself to make sure you're all right.
A group of gunmen watching the prisoners parted. Pamela stepped through the gap and walked forward. Relief washed through Conrad again as he saw that she appeared to be all right. They hadn't hurt her when they captured her. But then, he realized that something was wrong after all. Something that sent his heart plummeting and ripped the hide off what was left of his soul. Pamela was smiling.
Why wouldn't I be all right, Uncle Anthony? Oh, Conrad, you were too easy, my dear. Simply too easy. You believed everything I told you. You poor fool!
Conrad felt like the world was crashing down around him. His head spun, and reality seemed to be slipping away from him. He couldn't be seeing and hearing these things, he told himself. He just couldn't. The pain was too unbearable. But it was real, he told himself. Pamela had betrayed him. Worse than that, actually, he thought. She had never been on his side. The whole thing had been a lie.
Your uncle never held you prisoner, did he?
Held a prisoner? The whole thing was her idea, you stupid son of a bitch.
Tarleton was right about one thing. He was stupid. Trace's revolver came up.
Drop the gun, Browning. I don't want you getting any crazy ideas. I'm gonna enjoy what these two have in mind for you, so I don't want to have to kill you too soon.
For a couple of heartbeats, Conrad debated with himself. Forcing them to put him out of his misery quickly held some appeal. He had suffered enough, and now the already shaky underpinnings of his heart and soul had been yanked out. But Frank Morgan had never quit just because the odds were against him. Although Frank didn't know it, Conrad had looked into his father's past. He knew that Frank had lost not only Vivian Browning, but also a woman called Dixie, who had been his wife for a time years later. Following Dixie's death, Frank had descended into a morass of grief, self-doubt, and whiskey, only to pull himself out of it and become stronger than ever. Conrad had never pretended to be the man his father was. But at that moment, he knew Frank wouldn't lose hope in a similar situation. As long as the drifter drew breath, the will to fight against even overwhelming odds would be in him. His son, Kid Morgan, could do no less. So it was at that moment that Conrad Browning died for all time. Circumstances might force him to wear the clothes or even to use the name, but it would be a pose, nothing more. Back in San Francisco, Claudius Turnbuckle had referred to Kid Morgan as a masquerade. Now it was just the opposite. Conrad Browning was the masquerade. Kid Morgan was the truth. The kid bent over, placed the gun on the ground, stepped back, and lifted his hands. Anthony Tarleton jerked the rifle toward the prisoners.
Take them in the cabin, all of them.
A couple of Tarleton's gunmen came forward to grab the kid's arms and shove him toward the cabin. One of them was the albino, Loomis. He gave Conrad an ugly grin. The rest of the hired killers, including Trace and Hogan, herded James, Meggie, and Whitfield ahead of them. Everyone went into the cabin. Smoke still clogged the air inside, although some of it had drifted out through the open door.
Somebody get that damn blanket off the chimney!
Tarleton held his rifle in one hand and waved the other in front of his face to clear away some of the smoke. One of the men went back outside. A minute later, the smoke stopped coiling out of the fireplace and started going up the chimney. Inside, the cabin was divided into two rooms. Tarleton nodded toward the open door between them.
Take the others back there and tie them up. You can leave Browning in here.
Tarleton, Hogan, and Trace kept their guns on the kid while the rest went into the other room. Except for Pamela, who stood to one side with that maddening smile on her face as she looked at the kid.
I bet you're just dying to hear all about it, aren't you, Conrad?
You're going to tell me anyway, aren't you?
Oh, yes. It's too delicious not to.
Then go ahead.
I've been planning this for years, Conrad. Ever since you abandoned me for that little frontier girl of yours and caused my father's death.
I had nothing to do with your father's death.
He wouldn't have been in jail and been murdered if it had not been for you and your father.
Pamela took a step forward. He thought she was about to slap him, but she controlled herself.
I lost everything.
Except your money.
Yes, and I was glad of that, because it meant I could afford to have my revenge on you. I thought long and hard about what would hurt you the most. I knew that money didn't mean all that much to you, but Rebel did. I paid Clay Laswell to put together a group of men and kidnap your wife. He was to arrange things so that you'd be there to witness it when he killed her. I wanted you to see your precious Rebel die, no matter what you did to try to save her.
He wondered fleetingly how he could have ever thought that Pamela had really changed. She was the same proud, bitter, spiteful bitch she had always been, made even worse now by her all-consuming hatred.
Even before that, though, Uncle Anthony had come back to this country from South America, and he and I agreed to work together to make you pay for what you'd done.
How we went about it was all this little girl's idea.
Pamela moved closer to him and lifted a hand to stroke his arm. The kid forced himself not to jerk away.
After that night, we thought you were dead. Everyone believed that you died when your house in Carson City burned down. The stories in the newspaper even hinted that you might have killed yourself. Whose body was it that they found in the rubble, Conrad?
One of Laswell's men. He followed me there because I'd killed his brother in Black Rock Canyon.
I always knew you could be a smart man. So you let everyone think the body was yours. You wanted to lie low until you could figure out who would come after you.
The kid didn't say anything. Pamela was figuring things out for herself just fine.
Uncle Anthony and I kept track of Laswell and the men he'd hired. When they started dying, killed by some mysterious man no one could identify, I began to wonder. When Laswell himself was killed, I knew.
So you came to Valverde?
That's right. I knew if you were really still alive, you couldn't stay away from your wife's grave. You'd have to go there sooner or later. We were waiting. I thought the mysterious woman putting flowers on Rebel's grave was a nice touch, don't you? Even though what I really wanted to do was spit on it.
The kid felt his muscles tremble. He wanted to slap Pamela as she stood so close to him, hissing out her hatred, but he didn't do it. He kept himself under control.
Why the big show? Why not just kill me and be done with it?
Because that would have been too easy. You wouldn't have suffered enough if we'd done that.
That was the answer he'd been expecting. He had no doubts about it now. Pamela Tarleton's hatred for him had driven her insane.
So you see, that ambush at the cemetery was never meant to finish you off. It was just the beginning. And it was that stupid priest's own fault that he was wounded. He stepped in front of a bullet that was intended to miss you, Conrad.
Also that you could pretend to escape and worm your way back into my affections?
Exactly. I thought perhaps you'd turn to me again after all this time. And I could pretend to love you once more. So it would hurt that much worse when you found out the truth.
You were wrong about that. Nothing could ever hurt me more than what you did to Rebel.
Good! I wanted to put you through hell, Conrad Browning, and I did!
He couldn't deny that, but he wasn't going to give her the satisfaction of admitting it.
How did the McTavishes get mixed up in your sick little scheme, Pamela?
That was just pure luck. Bad luck for them, I suppose you'd say. Hogan happened to see Jack Trace on the street in Valverde and recognized him. They had ridden together a few years ago in a range war or some such nonsense. Hogan thought that Mr. Trace might be a good addition to our little group, so he managed to talk to him privately in town and invited him to join us. Mr. Trace told him about your connection with those Scottish people, and once I heard about that, I realized it would make another good weapon to use against you.
You'd gun down a man and kidnap his daughter just to help you get back at me?
Of course! I'd do anything to make you suffer, Conrad.
Including riding for 2 days so you could pretend you followed us to help me.
Well, it wouldn't be a proper revenge if I wasn't here to see it for myself, now would it?
A proper revenge. That was all this was to her. That was all Rebel's death meant. To Pamela, Rebel wasn't a living, breathing human being with loves and hopes and dreams who'd had all that cruelly snatched away from her. She was just a means to an end, as far as Pamela was concerned. A weapon to use against him, as Pamela had called it. The kid knew about weapons. He just preferred those made of iron and steel and lead, not flesh and blood.
Borland was telling the truth about you, wasn't he? You lured him into your bedroll and then screamed.
Lured? Conrad, you make me sound like some sort of... I don't know. A spider spinning my web. You know? I rather like that.
Why? Why did you do that?
Well, that was just one less man we had to deal with today, wasn't it? I knew that Mr. Trace could be counted on to side with us, but I wasn't sure about any of the others. It never hurts to tilt the odds as far in your favor as you can, you know. Besides, I wanted to see just how eager you were to believe everything I told you. I guess I found out, didn't I?
The kid wasn't going to lose any sleep over Borland's death. The man had been a hired killer with plenty of blood on his own hands. But he hated the way Pamela had manipulated him. He hated even worse the way he had gone right along with her, making it easy for her to fool him.
I suppose when Trace finally deserted, he told you all about our plan to take the cabin?
It was a pretty good plan.
Might even worked, if we hadn't been waiting for you.
Hogan spoke up. The kid knew it was him because of the scar that marred an otherwise handsome face. Pamela had told the truth about that much anyway.
We left one man here to keep throwing wood on the fire so you'd think we were all in here. The rest of us took the girl and hid out in the brush until we were ready to circle around behind Whitfield's men and bushwhack them.
The kid looked at Anthony Tarleton.
Aren't you going to get in on this boasting too?
I don't need to do any boasting. I got what I wanted. At least, I will have, once I've watched you die screaming.
Don't think it won't happen, too. Loomis in there is mighty good at torture. He was down in Mexico a few years ago when some Apaches grabbed him. They didn't kill him, because they'd never seen anybody like him before. They just kept him a while, practically made him one of them. Taught him everything they knew about making a man wish he was dead, and that's considerable.
The kid knew that was true. It was a toss-up which tribe was the cruelest, the Apache or the Yaqui. If Loomis had spent time with the Apaches, he would know every trick there was to make a man scream in agony. The kid was human. He felt a twinge of fear. But he didn't let it show, nor did he allow surprise to appear on his face when Pamela sidled over to Hogan and slipped an arm around him.
I just love to hear you talk like that, honey.
He shouldn't have been surprised, the kid thought. Of course, Pamela had found herself a new man. Her biggest talent was wrapping men around her finger and getting them to do what she wanted. Obviously, she'd been willing to give herself to Hogan in exchange for him helping her achieve her twisted goals.
Why did you spare the lives of James, Maggie, and Whitfield?
I know how stubborn you can be, Conrad. It was just possible you wouldn't surrender, even if you thought I was in danger. But I knew you wouldn't be able to stand it if we turned Loomis loose on the girl and she started screaming. As for McTavish and Whitfield, you seem to be friendly with both of them. An extra hostage or two never hurt anything. Anyway, they're not really a threat. An old man and a boy, they're no match for Hogan and Mr. Trace and the others.
Unfortunately, that was true. Pamela had a dozen professional killers at her beck and call. If James and Whitfield tried anything, those gun wolves would just shoot them down. They were expendable.
That's enough talk. Let's get to it. I want to see Browning suffer.
Hogan gave Pamela an affectionate squeeze.
I'll tie him in a chair, and then Loomis can go to work on him.
Yes, it's time.
The kid knew that if he allowed them to tie him down, he would probably never get up alive. They might keep him alive for hours, or even a day or two, while Loomis tortured him. But in the end, he would die. And so would James and Maggie McTavish and Dave Whitfield. The time had come for desperate measures. The kid's knees buckled as Hogan and Trace approached him, and he fell to the floor.
Oh, God, no! Don't do it, please! Please, I'll pay you! I have money! Money! I'll pay you!
So do I, Conrad! Anyway, there's not enough money in the world to save you.
Tarleton jerked the barrel of his rifle toward the kid.
Get him up from there.
The kid covered his face with his hands and hunched over. His shoulders shook as if he were sobbing.
Please don't kill me. Please.
Crying like a baby.
Trace and Hogan reached down, each of them taking hold of one of the kid's arms. His left hand shot up. He grabbed the front of Hogan's shirt and swung the man hard to the right, sending him stumbling into Trace. At the same time, the kid surged to his feet, moving to his left so that the two gunmen were between him and Tarleton. The kid slammed the heel of his boot into Hogan's knee. Hogan let his coat slip through his fingers. The kid caught the gun before it hit the floor. He didn't fire, though. He couldn't survive a shootout with a dozen hardened killers.
Stop him! Stop him!
The kid lunged at Pamela. She was too stunned by the sudden eruption of action to move. He looped his left arm around her waist and jerked her off her feet. He threw her over his left shoulder and rammed his right against the door. It flew open.
Don't shoot! You'll hit Pamela!
The kid was counting on her being in the line of fire to make them hesitate rather than just blazing away at him. He hated to leave Maggie, James, and Whitfield behind, but the odds were just too high against him in the cabin's cramped quarters. If he was going to be able to help them, he needed to be out where he had room to move and had a hostage of his own.
Let me go!
Pamela started squirming and struggling in his grip. The kid tightened his hold on her and raced around the corner of the cabin. He had to get to the corral. As he reached the pole enclosure, he holstered the Colt and swung Pamela down from his shoulder.
You bastard!
Those were the last words she got out before his fist cracked into her jaw.
Oh!
Grab him. Don't let him get away with my knee.
The kid yanked the loop up that held the corral gate closed. With one arm around Pamela's limp body, he grabbed his buckskin and slung Pamela over its back. Then he vaulted up onto the horse. The kid held on to Pamela with one hand and the horse's mane with the other. His shout sent all the horses stampeding out of the corral. He rode among them, clinging precariously to both Pamela and the horse. The gunman had to scramble out of the way to avoid being trampled. One of the men ran out of the house carrying a burning branch from the fireplace to use as a torch. The kid palmed out his Colt as he rode past. The torch spun through the air and went out when it hit the ground. Then the cabin was behind him. Tarleton might be evil, but he wasn't a fool. He already realized what the kid intended to do. The plan had sprung almost fully formed into the kid's mind, brought to life by desperation, and acted upon instantly without hesitation. If he had hesitated, he would have died. He knew that. Now he had a chance to live. More importantly, he had another chance to settle the score for Rebel. The kid rode hard into the night. He could only go so far at a gallop. The circular depression was less than half a mile wide. Night had fallen, and it was difficult to be sure where he was going, but he thought he was headed toward the ridge where Whitfield and the others had been ambushed. Maybe the horses were still somewhere on the other side of it. He knew that Pamela's hired guns hadn't brought them into the corral yet. The horse went up the slope. He looked back over his shoulder, but couldn't see much. With any luck, the kid still had a few minutes before any serious pursuit could begin. They weren't going to catch him. He knew it in his bones. But there was still the problem of how to free James and Maggie and Whitfield. They were in danger because of Pamela's mad scheme of revenge directed at him, and he wasn't going to abandon them. He had a bargaining chip of his own. A beautiful but thoroughly evil bargaining chip named Pamela Tarleton. The kid heeled the buckskin into motion. He didn't flee northeast toward the desert the way they had come. Instead, he followed the ridge for half a mile and then cut southwest, climbing higher into the mountains that hung darkly above them. He knew that Tarleton and the others would come after him. And when they did, he wanted the high ground. Several times that night, the kid heard shouts in the distance as the killers searched for him. He pushed on, despite worrying about what might be happening to the three people he'd been forced to leave behind. He didn't think Tarleton would hurt them. The man was smart enough to know that the kid would want to bargain with him, and all he had to trade were the lives of the prisoners. When Pamela began to stir, the kid reined in and helped her to sit up in front of him.
What are you going to do, Conrad? You're not going to hurt me, are you?
Hurt you? I ought to kill you for what you've done, but I won't. And my ticket to getting the McTavishes and Whitfield away from your uncle.
He'll never let them go. Not as long as he thinks he can use them against you. He hates you almost as much as I do, Conrad.
Well, at least you're smart enough not to try to play up to me again. I'm not a complete fool.
It wouldn't do any good, would it?
Not one damn bit.
All right!
The kid's hand clamped over her mouth. He reached into his pocket with his other hand and pulled out a handkerchief. Before she could scream again, he gagged her with it.
You actually just did me a favor. If any of your uncle's men were close enough to hear that, they'll tell him about it. Maybe it'll help convince him he'd better try to negotiate with me.
He's just going to kill you! Oh, good meal for fat!
I'm not sure what you said, but we'll see about that.
The kid rode on, one arm locked around Pamela like an iron band. He didn't stop again until the gray of false dawn lightened the eastern sky. By that time, exhaustion had claimed Pamela. She sagged against him in a half-sleep, half-stupor. Her head rested on his shoulder. He reined the buckskin to a halt as they emerged from a winding trail onto a narrow bench that jutted out from the side of the mountain. It wasn't Big Hatchet Mountain. They were a little north of that point. He could see the other peak looming in the darkness to his left, cutting off some of the starlight. During the flight from Tarleton's men, the kid hadn't even tried to hide his trail. He wanted his enemies to be able to follow him come morning. A showdown was inevitable, but the kid intended to control the details of that showdown. Carefully, he dismounted and then lowered Pamela from the back of the horse. She didn't wake up, or at least she didn't appear to. Clucking for the buckskin to follow him, he carried Pamela over to a tree and set her on the ground at its base, leaning her against the trunk. He reached up quickly, snagged the coiled rope that was attached to his saddle, and wrapped it around her, tying her to the tree. Pamela came awake as he was wrapping the rope around her and the tree trunk. The makeshift gag had loosened enough for her to spit it out. The kid tied a knot in the rope, securing her.
Go ahead and curse me all you want. It won't change anything.
We'll see how smug you are when you're dying from a bullet in your gut.
Pamela struggled against the rope. She couldn't loosen it, though. How to tie a good knot was something else Frank Morgan had taught him, the kid realized, even though he hadn't really thought much about it at the time. Satisfied that Pamela wasn't going anywhere, the kid led his horse around to the other side of the tree. Once she couldn't see him anymore, not that she could have seen much anyway in the pre-dawn gloom, he took his other clothes out of the saddlebags. It felt good to discard the trappings of Conrad Browning and pull on the clothes of Kid Morgan. He strapped on the gun belt with its Buscadero holster and slid the Colt 45 he had taken from Hogan into it. The revolver was the same model as the one he normally carried, so he knew his ammunition would fit it. He settled the wide-brimmed brown hat on his head and walked back around the tree. The false dawn had faded, and the real thing was approaching. Enough light came from the glow in the eastern sky for Pamela to see him.
Conrad?
Used to be. The name now is Kid Morgan.
My God! You're the one who killed Laswell and all those other men?
That's right.
When I heard the description of the man, it never occurred to me that it might actually be you. I thought that you had hired some gunmen to track them down. But no, you decided to become a gunfighter like your father. Is that it?
Something like that.
She would never really understand, he thought, so he wasn't going to waste his time trying to explain it to her.
Oh, you're mad! Do you know that? You're insane! You're Conrad Browning! There is no Kid Morgan!
That's where you're wrong.
He turned away from her.
Fine. Play your little game. See if I care. But you can't bring Rebel back, no matter who or what you pretend to be.
The kid swung back around. He fought down the impulse to draw his gun and shoot her. He was a killer more than a dozen times over, but he was no murderer. Pamela would face justice for what she had done. Justice from the law. James and Maggie McTavish and Dave Whitfield had been in the other room. They could testify to what they had heard in the cabin. Pamela would go to jail for the rest of her life, which was probably the worst punishment of all for a woman like her.
Sorry I can't offer you a fancy breakfast. I can give you a piece of jerky and a sip of water from my canteen, though.
Go to hell! I don't want anything from you!
Have it your way.
He got some jerky from the saddlebags and went over to hunker on his heels at the top of the trail. From there, he could see for miles over the arid landscape of southern New Mexico territory. Closer at hand, as the sky lightened more, the small, brush-covered foothills below became visible where they folded in on each other. Closer still, the slopes became more rugged, with less vegetation. His eyes searched them, looking for any sign of the pursuit he knew must be down there. After a few minutes, he spotted movement in several places. The gunmen had spread out to search for him and Pamela. They were traveling in pairs, he saw, and the closest two men were riding through some mesquites about a quarter of a mile below him. That wasn't far from where he had stumbled over the game trail that led him to this bench. He stood up and walked quickly back to the tree where he'd left Pamela.
I guess I am pretty hungry, after all. I'll take that piece of jerky.
Sorry, you're too late.
What are you talking about?
The kid crammed the handkerchief into her mouth again. This time he took off his bandana and used it to tie the gag in place so that she couldn't work it out and start yelling. He didn't want Tarleton's men finding either of them just yet. Not until he'd had a chance to whittle down the odds a little. To that end, he went back to the buckskin, took a sheathed knife from the saddlebags, and attached it to his belt on the left side. The knife had belonged to Philip Bearpaw. After the Paiute was wounded, he had insisted that the kid take it, along with the old Sharp's carbine that Bearpaw carried. The kid intended to put the knife to good use. He loped past the tree where he had tied Pamela. When he reached the top of the trail, he started down it, staying low so that the brush flanking the path gave him some cover. In the still, clear mountain air, he heard the slow, steady hoofbeats of the horses below him as their riders searched for his trail. The kid left the path and made his way into the brush where it was particularly thick. He stretched out on the ground and waited. He knew it was only a matter of time before the men found the tracks the buckskin had left. Sure enough, in less than 10 minutes, he heard the horses coming closer. A minute after that, he heard voices.
I still think we should signal the others.
Don't you reckon Tarleton will be even more grateful if we bring back Browning and the girl by ourselves? I reckon the girl might be real grateful if we was to rescue her.
You're dreaming, Quint. That gal ain't ever gonna give you the time of day. She's too rich and snobby for that. Not to mention a mad loco.
The hombre had Pamela pegged, all right, the kid thought. She was everything he'd just said. The kid didn't recognize either voice, so he knew the men had to be some of the hired guns Anthony Tarleton had gathered. He stayed where he was, letting the men come closer. The trail grew narrower here, which was another reason he had picked that spot. As the riders came in sight, the brush closing in on either side forced them to climb the trail in single file. The kid didn't move, didn't even breathe as they went past him.
We might be getting close now.
They didn't know how close they were, the kid thought. close to death. He waited until both men had gone past him, then slid out of the brush almost noiselessly, drawing the knife as he did so. He leaped onto the back of the second horse behind the rider and looped his left arm around the man's neck as he plunged the knife into his back. The man stiffened in shock and pain and made a little noise as the blade went into him. The kid pulled it free and then drove it in again. The man in the lead started to hip around in his saddle.
You say something, Quint?
He saw Quint's face contorting in its death agony with a kid peering over his shoulder.
Oh, crap.
The man clawed at the gun on his hip. The kid pulled the knife out of the dying man's back and threw it with swift, unerring accuracy. The kid wasn't quick enough. The hombre had already unholstered his gun. The bullet screamed off harmlessly into the sky. It was only one shot, not the usual three that formed a signal, but that didn't matter. It would still be enough to bring the rest of Tarleton's men in their direction. The kid let go of the man he'd been holding and slid down from the horse. The other man had fallen off his mount as well, but he was still alive. The kid stepped over to him as both horses, spooked by the sudden smell of fresh blood, rattled their hocks toward the top of the trail. The kid reached down and twisted the colt out of the man's hand. He didn't have much time, but there were a few things he wanted to know. He hunkered down beside the man.
What's your name?
My name?
That's right.
Jess Winger. Who the hell are you? You're him. You're Browning.
Not anymore. The name's Kid Morgan.
Kid Morgan? Hell, I heard of you. They say you killed half a dozen men.
More than that. Two more now. Quint's dead and you're about to be, Jess. How many more men does Tarleton have?
Go to hell!
The kid grasped the knife and pulled it out of the man's chest.
Die quick or bleed to death slow. Your choice.
They're gonna kill you.
Then what does it matter if you answer my question?
Jess Winger couldn't argue with that logic.
There are 13 men, counting Tarleton and that fella Trace. Hogan's not much good, though. You busted his knee. He can't walk. He can barely ride.
I bet he can still shoot, though.
You'll find out.
He wiped the blood from the blade on Winger's shirt, then straightened to his feet. He bent and grasped Winger under the arms and dragged him off into the brush. He concealed Quint's body the same way. Then he kicked some dirt over the blood that had spilled on the trail. The kid looked up. The rest of Tarleton's men were on their way. He turned and hurried up the trail to get ready for them. Pamela's eyes were wide as she watched the kid walk toward her. Both horses had reached the bench and run off toward the cliff that formed the rear wall of the small level space. He saw them cropping grass. They had settled down in a hurry once they got away from the smell of blood. The kid knelt beside her and drew his knife.
Uh-oh!
Don't worry. I'm not going to kill you.
He used the blade to cut the rope that held her to the tree. His other hand closed around her arm.
Come on.
He sheathed the knife and grasped her other wrist, then moved them together and held them in one hand. Stooping, he picked up the rope and looped it around her wrists, quickly tying it in place and then cutting off the extra. He coiled the lariat on the saddle again.
You want me to take out that gag? Sorry, it stays for now. Let's go.
Oh.
Holding on to the short length of rope that dangled from her bound wrists, he led her toward the cliff. It wasn't sheer. He had already noticed a ledge that led up to it, zigzagging back and forth. He hoped it was wide enough for the buckskin. He would hate to have to leave the horse behind. He'd never had a better mount. With the buckskin following him, he started up the ledge, which was about a yard wide. The kid wouldn't have wanted the ledge to be any narrower, but if it stayed like this all the way to the top, he thought that they could make it. He wished there'd been time to reconnoiter at the top of the cliff. He didn't know what he'd find up there, but he knew he had to keep moving higher. Eventually, of course, he would run out of places to go. Then it would be time for the showdown. The ledge took them to the top of the cliff, where they came out on another bench, even smaller than the first one. 20 yards deep, maybe 40 yards long, it backed up to another cliff, and this one was sheer. The rock wall had an opening in it, the black mouth of a cave. The kid led Pamela toward it.
Get inside.
Pamela hung back and shook her head emphatically.
There's nothing in there.
Of course, he didn't know that. The black hole in the cliff might be a bear's den, or there might be a nest of rattlesnakes inside. He relented and fished a match from his pocket, snapped it to life with his thumbnail. The match cast a harsh light into the cave, which was shallow enough that the kid could see all the way to the back of it. There was nothing inside except dust and a few broken branches that lay near a charred spot where a fire had once been, and the picked clean skeleton of a dead man, also lying next to the old fire. The kid stepped back, his mouth tightening. Chances were the bones belonged to an old Indian who had climbed up here to die. From the looks of the skeleton, it had been here for years, maybe even decades.
All right, settle down. I reckon you don't have to go in there after all. Just sit down there with your back against the rock, and don't move.
She sat about 10 feet to the right of the cave mouth. The kid took the Winchester from the saddle boot and went back to the place where the ledge ended at this smaller bench. From there, he had a good view of the slopes below them, including the spot where the trail emerged onto the lower bench. He stretched out on the ground and trained the rifle on that spot. It was just a matter of waiting.